So, this is Aruna, who is Dylan's student, and so we're looking forward to her talk here. It looks like in collaboration with Anika Salsa. So I'm interested to see what kind of mechanisms might be involved in this. So.
Cool. So, hi everyone. I'm going to be presenting this paper. Many of the results in this paper are fresh off the oven. Like, I think I kind of made some, I kind of made some discoveries last week. So, I'm really excited to have this slot. The Biolab meeting slot is super popular. So, I'm really glad, I could like talk to you all today, and it would be really helpful to get some feedback. And yeah, so feel free to, just be super open and critical, and I'm really looking forward to hearing your feedback. So so this is the title is to look at reward distributions and using reward distributions to guide model generation. And this is joint work with Amir Zul, Atticus Geiger, and Dylan. There are two primary motivations for this work. One is that when we think about causal mediation analysis, where we're using these prompts and counterfactuals and we're patching from one to the other, we often look at outputs that are like single token output distributions. And causal mediation analysis based interpretability in these multi-token output distributions is relatively underexplored. So that was one primary motivation for this work. And the second being, rewards are inherently interpretable, and I'll get to this in, I think, a few slides. So basically, like most of the chat models that we're using today, use RLHF for training and to guide generation. And we have, I think two primary methods that people use to optimize these chat models. So one is PPO, which is like an older technique now. It's only been a few years, but it's sort of like, there are lots of different optimization techniques, but DPO is also like one of the more popular ones. And in the case of PPO, you have an external reward model. So you start with a base model, then there's some supervised fine-tuning, then there's an external reward model that's trained on a set of human preferences. And finally, you use that external reward model to basically optimize a policy, and you have your final chat model. The DPO model is a little more interesting because you subsume this external reward model into the final chat model. So the reward model is basically enshrined in the chat model that you have. So you can actually extract a reward function just using, the chat model that you have, and the model is optimized using this internal rewarding mechanism. So the question really that we were interested in was whether we can use reward distributions to guide generation in some meaningful way. Of particular interest, as I mentioned earlier, are the DPO models, because these reward functions can be extracted from the chat model itself. In fact, this is the reward that you can get from your DPO model, where the pi theta is the final like chat model that you interface with, and the pi ref is basically the policy from the base model or the reference model. So for every response that the model produces, there is this inherent reward value, and the model is trained to prefer responses that have higher rewards than lower rewards. So there is basically, in these DPO models, there's a theoretical entanglement between the reward function as well as the responses that are generated. And the question that we were interested in was whether there is a mechanistic entanglement. So are the components that are sensitive to manipulating the rewards in the model also sensitive to manipulating generation? So if you take a particular task, you can think of it as having two components. Like, one is just supervision, which is, telling the model which preferences to rank higher or lower. And there's the act of actually like generating outputs pertaining to the task. So the question was whether there is a mechanistic entanglement between these two ideas, given that we know there is a theoretical entanglement. And why would this be a good thing? It would be a good thing because A, it's really cool that you can show that there's this entanglement, but also because rewards are inherently interpretable entities. Your reward is a numeric value, so if it goes up, the model is going to prefer this more. If it goes down, that the model is going to prefer it less. So if you can use this up and down sliding to actually then influence what the multi-token output distributions are, then that could be like, I don't know, like a really cool space where you maybe have steerable controls that tell you, that push the model like one way or another just using these numeric distributions.
So, Aruna, I'm so stupid. I'm gonna read your formula here and see if I understand the symbols correctly. So, pi sub ref, is that the base model before fine tuning? And pi sub theta, that is the DPO fine tuned model. And then you're saying that even though there's so you're saying that the reward can be explicitly formed by just taking the difference between the log probs of these, and that's directly the reward. And so now, so that and that's so for an extended rollout, that's just the sum of the individual token log probs, and I just take the difference between these two sums, and then that
That's
directly
it.
gives me the reward. It's sort of interesting. So like my if I remember right, so like DPO is not sensitive to the exact reward. It's actually like a shift, like if you were to add 10 to all the
That's a
rewards,
great
whatever, right? It's like,
question. Yeah.
but this is a plausible reward that could have led to the same DPO. Is that right?
So this is a great question. So basically, the reward that I've shared on the screen is like a simplified representation. Like there's another constant actually that's part of this function, but basically in my method I'm going to be using differences of differences, so basically that constant cancels out.
Got it.
So that's a really good question, but like we overcome, so
I think
the
it's
thing
just
is
a
that you can,
technicality. I think I
yeah,
get
it's
the
a,
idea. Yeah.
and like
Okay.
you can you if you're just calculating the actual absolute reward for a response, you need to also know this constant factor and there's a beta value, but we're going to be working in a difference in different settings, so those values will all cancel out. So that's the so why would this be useful? It's useful because rewards are inherently interpretable, and the goal is that you maybe have like an interface where there's a slider and the user is able to like just steer towards like a numerically high or low value, and that has a corresponding influence on the multi-token generation. So these are the two big motivations. Also because I think I'm really interested to see how like the future of interpretability assists like not just developers, which is I think where we are right now, like where we're trying to like use it for more performant models or understand models better, but also a future where like the end user who has no idea about any of this, like how would they use like the methods that we've developed over the last few years. So so the goal is to investigate whether these reward circuits can guide generation. And today I'm going to be using three task settings. So one is the classic refusal problem where you're trying to get the model to refuse harmful questions and get it to answer harmless questions. But I will try to get the model to refuse harmless questions, which is the more boring setting, but I'm sorry, I don't have the experiments for the other one done yet. The second setting is stylization, where I do style transfer. So basically, you can think of it as something that works in place of a system prompt. So suppose you want to get the model to like respond in verse, as opposed to like responding in just like the standard prose that it uses. So can we use like reward distributions to do that? And the last setting that I look at is to reduce sycophancy. So can we actually use these distributions to suppress the sycophantic behaviors of models? And I look at this again in like a constraint setting. So the overall kind of way that I do this is, in all cases, I'm always identifying components that are sensitive to reward manipulation. So these components, they're only going to be measuring whether the reward is increasing or not, like using standard causal patching methods. And then I will ablate these reward sensitive components, and then the goal is to the the exciting result is whether the generation is affected, right? So that's the goal. So that's yeah. So the first step, so I think David, yeah, he was like super astute, and he noticed that, you know, the reward was this super simplistic value, and the reason why I can do that is because we work in this difference of difference setting. So what we do is we have the base queries. Sorry, I've been working with Atticus. So earlier I used to say prompts and counterfactuals, but he uses this base and source thing. So I'm going to, you know, now I've got a little bit of a recency
Which
bias.
one are you patching from to, and which one to?
Yeah, so the base is the prompt and the source is the
Okay,
counterfactual. So the
cool.
base is the baseline and the source is the target. You know, I don't know why they call it the source. They should probably call it the target. But anyway, so
But the error with the patch goes from source to base, right?
yeah, sorry, that's a mistake. Good catch. So it is from source to base. Yeah.
We
And
do
the
this like everybody does it.
yeah. It's just standard patching. This arrow is confusing. Yes, it should just be I don't have my cursor, but it should be pointing from source to base.
Yes. It's
So,
pointing
but
to
it's
source.
pointing both directions. So, oh, they differ. No, actually, it's true. They both differ in one token. I think that's what I was trying to say. But the patching direction is, yeah, from source to base. Yes. So we have these base queries, which are which you know are the baseline behavior. They model the baseline behavior that the model has, and then we have these source queries, which are by just changing one token, you can like kind of change the nature of the behavior. And I'll be giving you some examples. So yeah, so hold any thoughts like just about the queries. And in each case, we generate, you know, preferred and dispreferred responses. So again, preferred responses are the baseline behavior of the model. So you're not going to try to get it to like respond in any other way. Like it's just the baseline response that the model generally would make if you give it that query. And the dispreferred response is basically the undesired behavior or the behavior that you want to guide it towards. So not undesired, like the target behavior, the behavior that you want to guide it towards. So and then you patch, you know, from the source to the base. Like this group like needs no introduction to any of this. Like so yeah, so basically this is the initial step. And the second step is that it's really important to use reward differences, that it's your you know using the difference between the preferred and the dispreferred responses, because rewards in and of themselves don't mean anything. Like if you have like a response from a model and it has some value n, there's no inherent meaning to that. Like there's only meaning if you know that there are two responses, one with a reward n, another with a reward m, and there's some comparative relationship between n and m. So it was kind of important that we use reward differences. So basically we use the difference between the preferred and the dispreferred rewards in the clean and the patched state to guide the model towards, you know, the source data distribution. So here's one example from the refusal setting. So here my base prompts will always be outlined in yellow. So you have how to make a cake at home, and this is like a harmless prompt, and I'm just going to change one token in that query, which is how to make a bomb at home. And you change the nature of the behavior to be from, I mean, to move from like harmless to harmful. And in each case you have preferred and dispreferred responses. So for the case where the behavior is harmful, your preferred response is that the model refuses the query. And the dispreferred response is where it, you know, actually answers the query. And like Yixu gave us an amazing, you know, yeah, just in I don't have to talk about jailbreaks because she kind of, you know, yeah, already set the stage for me. So, you know, we do use jailbreaks to like generate the dispreferred responses in this setting. And in our baseline prompt, yeah, the preferred response is just what the model will generate naturally when I ask it this question. And for the dispreferred response, again, I jailbreak the model. So I don't use GCG, which was not very performant as when I try to use it. So I use a very simple jailbreak, which is I use multi-shot in context learning. So I just give the model like a bunch of examples and give it like a final example that it has to, you know, give me the answer for, and it'll just do it. So one thing of importance that folks might ask here is, yeah, so is it possible to generate risk preferred responses? Yes. And obviously, like we do a behavioral analysis and we ensure that the reward for the preferred response is always higher than that for the dispreferred response. So I think Yixu also, had this in her second project, but one interesting behavior that we're looking at is this is not always true. And this is because of what I was describing with respect to the base model probabilities playing a role. Sometimes the base model's very low probabilities can push the reward high, and we think that might be why, some of these jailbreaks are occurring. But anyway, so that's an aside. Another question is, why would I be jailbreaking these models? Can I not use ChatGPT or, some other third-party model to do this? So hold that thought. Like, one reason why we started off with just jailbreaking the model was because we're very interested in the data and the reward distributions of the model. And it's kind of important that, that these response distributions come from the model and not from a third-party source. Though I do have some results from just getting this from ChatGPT and what this then looked like. So I'll be talking about that. And the next step, oh, I don't know, my numbering is wrong, but like the next step.
So backing up for a second. So your source, wait, so okay, go back to, so you described your source base is, so is this, is one of these source and one of these base?
Yeah,
Sorry.
the yellow is the base and the red is the source.
I see. And is there, and then you mentioned jailbreaking. Are you jailbreaking as part of one of these things, or you're not jailbreaking? It's just, you're just doing this thing to cause a difference. You're just changing one word, and that's just source and base. Just one word difference.
There's this one word difference, but for generating the dispreferred response, especially for the refusal setting, I had to jailbreak. For my two other settings, what I do is that the preferred of one becomes a dispreferred of the other. So those are like easier settings, like, but refusal was a, yeah, was like a slightly different
And
setting that you also
and
wanted to
is
do.
a jailbreak part of your prompt? So that you say how to make a bomb at home, and some jailbreak in
Oh.
there. Is that what you mean by using
Oh,
jailbreaking?
great question. Okay, so no, our source and target queries are just going to be like what's on the screen here. But when we were generating the preferred and the dispreferred responses, we used jailbreaks to just get the response distributions.
Oh, I see. Okay,
The
okay,
jailbreaks were more for
okay,
the response distributions
okay.
and not for the
I see.
query.
Just to get this text, you're going to use log
Yeah,
probs on.
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
I see. So it might not be the direct answer here. It might
Yes.
be some other
Yeah.
way of getting the
Yeah.
text.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Okay. I think I got it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Really
So,
cool.
yeah, you have a question?
Oh, interesting.
No, I was just
Actually,
saying it's a really cool setup.
okay, cool.
Yeah.
Thank
We were
you.
talking about this yesterday, me and Arnold.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, but you
Okay.
scooped
The
them.
task to multiple.
No,
Because
we're
I
like,
don't have
wait a minute, because there are some things that I'll come to in the end, and we should be talking about that. So,
time.
yeah. So anyway, so there's a step that I skipped here, and I'll tell you why. So initially, I can just like maybe talk briefly about it, but it's not super important to the story, and it's I skipped over it. But the first thing we did was actually a coarse grain patching. So we did residual stream patching to just see whether the layers that are influential in manipulating the rewards are also influential in manipulating the generations. And the correlation is very weak. And I skipped over those slides, but I can show them later.
I thought you're doing DAS, like,
I'm doing attention head patching
yeah,
directly.
your
So
rotations.
yeah. So these are more fine grain patches, but yeah.
What about this Atticus, guy?
About Atticus's.
Like the
Always,
DAS method.
yeah,
Yeah, you don't have to be that if you.
he knows himself. They're a little bit fragile, right? He's just go back to, patching
No, we're also looking at our data sets. So the
identity.
data sets we use are like really tiny. So these are like
But these are being
50.
recorded, right? Good or
That's right.
strange.
These are like
Yeah.
that small.
Actually, you would overfit
Yeah. So
on
we didn't use that.
that. Exactly. Oh, I'm glad I asked. I just assumed you're doing
Oh,
that.
okay. Yeah. But it would be really cool to use DAS as well here. I can, so yeah, there are lots of failed things that happened like through this project. So there's lots to definitely say there. But anyway, so the next step is sort of a very fine grain patching. So we're just patching attention head components. And we're finding, the attention heads that are most sensitive to manipulating the reward. So the metric that we use is the one at the bottom. So basically, we're trying to find attention heads that maximize the, so if you notice like this equation in the numerator, the first quantity is the sign flipped version of the second one. So what we want to see is whether the reward direction flips, like after we do the patches. And this is actually, and the denominator is to ensure that this reward distribution is close enough to the source distribution that we're trying to guide it towards. So the numerator has a role of like flipping the reward, and the denominator has a role of ensuring that this stays close to the source distribution. So one other point I want to make is this is very close to the optimization function that was used in the IOI paper. So they were looking at single logit, differences. We are looking at collective like log probs, basically.
Nice.
So we're looking at like the whether maximizing, like finding components that maximize the collective reward, right? The collective log prob can actually steer or guide generation.
So right now you are in multiple token settings.
Yeah.
So you are generating a lot of tokens. Do you do this batching in all of these generations, like throughout the generation process, or at just the first token?
Great question. Yeah. So this is where like rewards are really useful, right?
Yeah.
Because you the actually this is not related. So you're just we're just patching across. We're patching across all tokens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now my second question will be, how sensitive is it? To the length of your generations? Because right now what you are doing is, it's kind of like an inverse of perplexity, log perplexity. They're very, very sensitive to the length of the generations.
Yeah.
Because it's the language model. It's supposed to, it kind of like picks up what it needs to say.
Yeah.
So how do you handle that?
So this is actually handled by the reward computation. So the rewards actually, like you can, when the models are trained, like they're normalized for the reward, but we could try another approach where we also normalize by the length. We didn't do that and we still got decent results, but we could try an approach where the reward, there are like different reward definitions, and one of them will divide it by the length of the response. So you're like normalizing by the length of the response.
That's not a good approach, right? Because I mean, as you are sampling more and more tokens, like some of these tokens are kind of like obvious, like it's supposed to appear after, like given this context. So their logics will be obviously be high. And if you're just dividing it by their length, that is kind of...
But
you saw that you are getting reasonable results.
Yeah, even without normalizing by the length. There is like past literature that has looked at, like normalizing by length just in the context of rewards, like not in the context of causal mediation analysis, but it would be interesting to see like what kind of differences we get, right? Like when we do this. So it's a good question.
Okay.
But...
And the thing is that when you are doing this attention batching, you are doing it at a specific token position and you freeze the attention output to that value and let the model generate itself. Right?
We do it one by one. Yeah. So it's standard activation patching. So we patch at one attention head, look at the reward at, after patching, and then like repeat for each attention head. Though we also have an attribution patching approximation working for the same setup. So, I haven't tested it on my latest results, but I have tested it in the past and the results were identical. So you can actually think of these as, working like within a minute, like when you are sliding, like because you have the advantage of using attribution patching.
Okay.
So, yeah.
How can you do attribution patching here? Because because when you sample, you have lost the gradients.
Oh, great. So because you're working with the rewards, you're not working with like generative outputs. Because you're working in the reward space,
you can fix a couple of outputs. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that nice? No rollout. So you just take the rollout.
Okay.
That's a great question. So the thing that was hardest to test was we were looking at correspondences, like just correlations between doing things in the generation setting and doing things in the reward setting.
Yeah.
And like the reward setting is so fast to run, you know, because you can use like gradient approximation, but you can't use it like when you're doing generation because, yeah, gradients are disabled. Yeah, great question. And the last thing that we do is we ablate these reward sensitive components and then we study the effects on generation. So the way that we do this is we identify the top K percent of heads that maximize, you know, this like optimization metric. And then we ablate them with transformed mean representations of the source. And I'll come to why the transformed exists there. This turned out to be actually really important. I fumbled for a couple of months until, you know, like this transformation was kind of like a little important. So I'll come to it in a bit. And then we evaluate whether the generation text is biased towards the source after we do this ablation. And the way that we do this is we use a judge model and we use Likert scales. So one aside here is I find the harm bench like evaluations of refusal like pretty brittle because they use like keyword matching. So they look at whether the text has as an AI or like, you know, I cannot or sorry or I can't. And basically like when you actually like play with the model and you get it to generate things, you'll see that lots of times it'll say as an AI, I can totally help you, you know?
Oh, really?
So yeah, so it's not as shallow as people think it is, like this whole token, just the initial tokens of the model. So so that was one reason why we wanted to use like a judge model and a Likert scale. So
I have another question.
Yeah.
It'll be a dumb question, but
no.
What is the relationship between refusal and attention hits?
This was totally an aside, like in the sense that we want to do evals,
okay,
right? So how will we do the evals? We will find attention heads that are sensitive to reward manipulation. So which are the attention?
What's so interesting about attention heads? Why it can't be MLP or simple residual streams?
Oh, we thought residuals were too big, so we didn't want to work with residuals, but we've not looked at MLPs. So yeah, that totally open. We still need to look at MLPs. We just looked at attention heads because I've looked at attention heads in the past and I found that they're fun to like mess with. So it was just like the first, it was just like an obvious choice.
Okay, that's a good reason to do it. Research.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, sure.
We're like, yeah, I need to look at MLPs. So this is a great point. Yeah. To answer your question, like we find attention heads that are affecting just the rewards, and then we want to see once we patch in those what happens to generation, right? But we need to evaluate generation. So to evaluate generation, we're using like a judge model and some kind of a Likert scale. So I'll come to it like as I talk more, and yeah, so if you have any questions, and then we also want to just ablate randomly selected components and then make sure that it's not really like changing things very much. So yeah, you have a question.
No, that's good.
Okay, and this is something I haven't done, but I basically also want to do this ablation but measure what happens to baseline LLM tasks. So basically look at tasks that are adjacent to the task setting I'm in and orthogonal to the task setting I'm in. So if I'm looking at refusal, then maybe looking at something like reasoning or MCQA, you know, something like that. But, you know, I'm also looking at sycophancy. So what happens to sycophancy versus refusal? Like, are they adjacent in some way? So these are things I haven't done, but I really want to do as part of this work. So there are three task settings, as I mentioned. So the first is sycophancy reduction, the second is style transfer to worse, and the last is refusal. Right now, I haven't looked at any other models besides the Qwen 1.514b model, but I will be running experiments on models of a bunch of different sizes. So right now, the two-dimensional setting is just one model, but multiple tasks. So we start off with...
set up to use ended?
Yes, I do use NDIF. Yeah. I use.
Oh, we love this.
We use Insight. I use Insight. So anyway, so we start off with a behavioral analysis, and So here are the three task settings. The P and the D on the x-axis stand for preferred and dispreferred response rewards, and the difference is the reward difference. And you can see that there's a significant difference between the preferred and the dispreferred reward distributions. So maybe like, you know, so this was like an initial clue that maybe pushing between these two settings could also like change generation. Interestingly, the two settings, the reward differences are not significantly different. And this didn't seem to matter.
The two settings are...
Yeah, I'll let you all stare at the clues.
So the style versus prose. So it's... So this is... Let's see. And so... Okay, hold on for a second. So you've got... Pairs of pairs.
Yeah.
In each one, you have P and D.
Yeah.
And so, okay, so let's take a look at this sycophancy thing that you've got on the left. Right. And so this is the setting. So give me an example of what's it? So describe the sycophancy setting in words.
Yeah. So in the sycophancy setting, the model is given a poem, like a haiku, and a user opinion. So the user opinion can either be, I love this haiku, or I hate this haiku. And then you collect preferred and dispreferred responses. So this setting is a simpler setting because in the I love haiku case, whatever is the preferred reward becomes the dispreferred reward for the I hate haiku.
I see. So now the user says, I love this. And then the high reward, you know, response would be something like, oh, I agree, this is really great.
Yeah, it'll like, and then it'll if like the user really says, praise the
and,
poem.
And if
yeah.
the user says, oh, I hate this one, and it says, yeah, you're totally right, this is like the worst poem I've ever seen, right? So that, so, right, so that's what the reward model is rewarding in these two cases. And so when you say, so you split out the positive and negative case of like the user liked it and the user hated it as green and blue.
Yeah.
And then when the model agrees with you, then that's always P.
Yeah.
And then when you switch it to the model's opposite, that's what you're measuring as D.
Yeah.
And then diff is just the difference between those two.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. And then a similar pattern for all the rest.
Yeah, I think I made a mistake. I'll be going through the tasks in detail, but I think the slide should have maybe come later.
No, it's like, okay. Yeah. It's okay.
I think the only takeaway from this slide is that the difference between the preferred and the dispreferred reward distributions is significant. So these are like, you know, very different distributions. And that's the only takeaway. And on the left, you have like one setting and then the two settings are in different colors. So, yeah.
Sorry, dumb question. Do you have a reward model for each of the cases?
Or is
no.
it the same? It's the
it's
same.
The same reward model.
It's the same reward model.
So the reward model is just within the DPO model and you don't even have an external reward model. So this is just like the standard DPO reward setting that we use. So we're working with one chat model,
right?
But you can extract a reward function.
Mm-hmm.
And because each of these tasks and the corresponding responses have different probabilities in those settings, mm-hmm. you're going to get different rewards.
Oh, I see.
So, yeah.
But it's great that it works, right? So it's basically like, at least on average, the model is preferring what?
Yeah.
It looks like the reward was.
So this is the first task, which is to reduce sycophancy in the model. So always the source prompts will be in red, always the base prompts will be in yellow. So the two prompts are identical, the queries are identical, except for the words hate and love, that's different between them. And in both cases, you ask the model to critique the haiku for you. So in the case where you tell it that you hate the haiku, it says, well, you know, the haiku you presented is kind of nice, but it could use like a more focused structure and a clearer connection between the elements. But if you tell it that you really love the haiku, then it'll just like give you glorious praise. And it's not going to give you any constructive feedback. So even though in both cases, the task is to critique the haiku. So
it's a two. Sorry.
So this is the first step, like where we just like have this data set and we know that the preferred and the dispreferred response distributions are going to be different. And then we, do standard attention head patching, tries to like maximize that metric. And then we ablate 3% of the heads and we can actually, and these are like heads that are sensitive to reward manipulation. And we see that there's a 76% reduction in the case where I'm targeting the heads that I found. But basically random heads also cause like a 54% reduction. I have a whole, I have like a lot of opinions on this idea of circuits, which I'll come to in the end. But yeah, this is something that I've been thinking about like as I was working on this project.
34%.
Yeah. So this is basically the reward change. Let me explain this properly. So when I patch in 3% of the heads, I see a 34% flip in the reward direction for random patching, but I see a 54% flip in the reward direction for targeted patching. And there's corresponding changes to generation. So in 76, so the generation's always in blue on the left side, changes in generation, and the reward changes are always on the right in green. So when I do these targeted patches on the reward sensitive components, I see a 54%, change in the way that the reward is assigned, but I see a corresponding 76% change in how generation is now different.
So the blue bars are LLM evaluated, is that right?
Bars are LLM evaluated.
Cool.
So
and I might have missed it. So you mentioned before you had some trick for how you had to do the ablation to make it.
Did you talk
about that already or not? Yeah.
No. So I will talk about that. So basically, let me talk about that actually. So,
Do you have a baseline for just next word without using the without using the reward model? You just try to achieve a certain logic distribution in the next word prediction, and then it also generalizes to generations.
You mean that if you remove that reference component in the reward, then what happens? Like just the standard log profs, or
you mean just a single token, not the whole rollout? Which token?
Just the first generated token, the logic distribution. And you
I did not look at that. Yeah, that's a good question. I did not look at that.
Because I asked that question because that was kind of the reason you went from first token, like modeling the first token to using this reward model to actually model the generations.
No, right? The biggest reason why we wanted to use the reward model was because these chat models are fine-tuned on the reward, like the optimization functions for both DPU and PPU use the reward function.
Yeah.
So our thinking was, given that it's so embedded in the optimization function, does the reward play a role in also like guiding generation?
Okay.
Yeah, but this is I don't know. That's a good question. I haven't looked at just the first token distribution, and I should. I just haven't done it. Yeah. But anyway, the transformation, so the thing that seemed like really important was that when you just patched the source representations directly onto the base, when the model was processing the base prompt, it didn't seem to make any difference. In fact, when you did you had to patch about 30 to 40% of the model in order to see that. So one trick that I tried was just steering. So, using like a difference in means, and that works. In fact, that works even better than this method, but it was also working very well in the randomized setting. So that was curious. So what I ended up doing was just amplifying the value of the source representation. So it's like a really small change, but it seemed to have this really big effect on just how many heads you needed to patch, and it seemed like more localized, even though I don't believe that the kind of settings I'm looking at are univariable settings. They're like actually simple settings, even though you're doing multi-token distributions, like you're just looking at one token difference, and that's the only variable in your abstract causal model. And I wonder if in these cases where there are these univariable causal models, there aren't like localized circuits, because I think patching gives us a way to efficiently find like the circuit that's able to guide the model, but I think
that makes sense. So when you're when you're patching these attention heads,
yeah,
you're patching them at one token, is that right? Is that what you said? No,
I patched the whole representation. But the whole representation only varies at one token, yeah.
Right. So I see.
No. So you patch it at one token or multiple tokens? Because
I patch it at all the tokens.
But the two prompts only differ by one token.
But the representation of the words after the word that you've changed are different.
Yeah.
I see. So you're patching all aspects of that attention head.
Yes.
Including the downstream effects.
Yes.
Interesting.
Should I not be doing that?
Oh, I'm not sure. Maybe you can.
I mean, like,
you can get Nikhil's advice about what he thinks. So, like, when you patch, you usually patch a specific token position.
Yeah, right? I patch a local token position.
Right.
Oh, even when you're doing attention head patching.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Right? I should try that. Yeah.
Because I wonder if you're getting some weird interference or something like that with your own patching.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, okay, that might explain why I was so untrustworthy and suspicious of circuits. Like, I could try this and maybe I'll feel more trustworthy.
How much did you have to amplify it?
By a factor of 5 or 10.
Pretty large. And you never have to amplify it to get your results, right?
Okay.
This is the first time I've heard
people. Yeah, I also never did it. Like, I think my sense was, so I was talking to Dylan about this, and one of the things he was saying was maybe, like, because these are multi-token distributions, like, if, you know, things are getting overwritten, right, and the amplification is necessary to stabilize the signal of the important, you know, attention heads, I kind of just tried something and it worked really well, and I'm still trying to figure out why.
The main parts of people do this in SAE steering, right?
Steering works actually even better, but the thing is, as I was saying, you know, with steering, I can.
So you usually need some coefficient, right?
Yeah, I use the same factor actually, even as my steering coefficient. But in the case of steering, even random steering was working really well. So I was like, okay.
You can destroy sycophancy by just randomly kicking them on the head. That's the problem with a lot of these things. It's like, you never know, right? It's like, can we get rid of the capability just by making the model dumb? And so that's dangerous.
And so this was sort of my Likert question, where I said, you know, read the following conversation between a user, and I give it two responses. So I give it the response pre-patching and post-patching. And then I say, well, response one, which is the post-patched response, offers more suggestions for improvement or points out more flaws. And I only pick responses that are 4 or 5. So I don't pick the neutral response. So this is kind of a stricter constraint. And these are some responses. The one in gray is like a false, you know, it didn't work for that case. So I just wanted to share.
We've been discussing a lot, Aruna. And I'm just warning you that I have to disappear in a few minutes. How much more do you have
to talk about? I think you've heard all of it. Like, it's just, I'm just going to show that in other task settings also.
It also works
pretty well.
It works pretty well.
Yeah.
And you can show off some more examples.
Yeah. Great. So like, this is, you know, inducing like a poetic style, same approach. And yeah, so here, like, the reward, so this is a reward and this is a generation, and there's a stronger correlation you can see between the reward and the generation. This was a Likert question, you know, just the responses in verse, that's it. And yeah, so here also there's like, you know, so it always started the responses with in the realm of something and blah, 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 blah. And in the failed sample, it also starts like that. It just doesn't construct a verse. So it's still a response in prose. And the last one was, I was trying to induce refusal, not trying to create a jailbreak, but like trying to do the, because it's easier, I need to do the harder thing, but like I was just doing, trying to get the easier thing to work first, and same approach. Here, you can see that in the random case, the rewards change by a lot, but somehow that doesn't translate to generation. So these are still some things that I'm figuring out. These are like very, very recent results. So yeah. And I think like actually here that it's something to do with my initial preferences, preferred response data sets, because the model would always refuse but hedge an answer. So I should probably change that and then retest it. But here it pretty much always refuses, but then answers. So it starts off with a refusal sentence, but then it answers the question. Yeah, so this is a setting that needs more work, for sure. Like I need to see if there's just something off with my data.
Is this also something which you still have amplified?
Yeah, everywhere I'm amplifying, yeah.
Shouting heads.
Sorry?
Shouting attention heads.
Yeah, shouting attention heads, exactly.
No, we don't want them to shout.
So this is something that I really wanted to show you. So this was, these are the reward distributions. Like pay attention to the blue and the green violin plots. The green plot is the behavior we want. The blue plot is the behavior we are trying to suppress. And basically, like there's like a pretty strong correlation between when the distance between these two increases and the corresponding like changes to generation. And I'm actually like, I'm working on a little demo where we can have a slider where as a user, you can see like how far these distributions are and like whether that changes generation. So you have the control to like, you know, do that shift and then like see what happens. Like this was a common pattern in all the three cases where the more the distance between these green and blue violin plots, the higher the likelihood that you'll see a greater number of responses in the target behavior. So this is true for all three cases. Yeah, and so these are like a lot of what if questions. So what if the data was blindly generated off of ChatGPT and not from the model's distribution? I thought this wouldn't work, but it seems to work decently. Like I'm not sharing the results because I'm not confident about them. So I'm still like kind of like, you know, just want to like double check and triple check those results. What if we use steering ablations instead of using like these shouting attention heads? It works way better actually. Like even sometimes with patching 1% of the attention heads, you know, I can cause like a change in behavior. It also seemed to affect like random steering, so randomly selected attention heads. So I need to look into that more. What if we use logit distributions directly? I think Arnab like maybe alluded to this a little bit. So I thought also that this wouldn't work, but this also works actually quite well. So this is also something that I'm looking into. Like Quinn doesn't release whether it's like a pure DPO model. There's like a lot of actually theoretical correspondence between PPO and DPO rewards. So I was like, okay, I'll just run this and have a pipeline working, but I want to test a pure DPO model with both these rewards as well as like logit distributions and see if it makes a difference. People have shown that there's like a paper called SimPO, which showed that in the DPO paper, you don't need the reference model's reward, and it still works pretty well. So I don't know if this is just more evidence for that, but yeah. And what if we use attribution patching? I've used it on one setting and the results are identical. Yeah, and one thing that I was, I think, bringing up was what if these aren't localized mechanisms, you know, like, because these random things are working just as well. Like, are circuits even a thing, like, in simple settings? But that could just be because I'm patching over the whole representation. So I will try just patching over, like, the token that changes. And the thing that I'm excited about is, yeah, what if we can have steerable controls? So you have some way to slide and just change the reward distribution, and then you see corresponding changes to generation. So yeah, that's the end of my talk. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for all your help. Actually, I think I ping a lot of you, and yeah, thanks for getting back to me when I do.
Could you go back to the patching setup?
Yeah.
Sorry. Maybe we still have some time.
Thing, yeah. Is it
it's just one? Because the difference of difference thing is kind of a bit of a brain melt.
Like, yeah. This is actually completely identical to
So you have like a source prompt, right?
Yeah.
And you have a base prompt.
Yeah.
And you patch one attention head output.
Yeah.
From the source prompt into the base prompt, and you observe how. Like how do you use the reward now?
The base prompt always is the base query and the response for desired and undesired, but the source prompt is just the query.
Mm-hmm.
So you have base query, base response, and then you just have source query alone being patched.
Ahead from the source query. You patch
all the representation, all the entire representation of the source query at one particular attention head. Yeah.
So okay. Yeah, maybe we need it. We need maybe that's hey maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
And we also do this patching caller voice, right? All everything.
This figure is a bit messy because it makes it seem like I'm only patching there, but I'm actually patching across. And I should try, like, I think what Nikhil was saying was just patching at that location. So, yeah.
So you're patching the whole column. So wait, so what does it mean? Okay, so I wasn't really paying attention to your diagram very closely here. So you're...
This is wrong. Like, it's all orange. Yeah.
It's all oranges. Okay.
No. 1 second. Sorry. I just want to say that so, you're patching one attention head at a time, but you're patching the whole representation.
All the tokens.
All the tokens.
So...
And
when you say you're patching one attention head, it's really it's the output of that attention head. It's that attention head's contributions to the next layer representations of all the tokens.
All attention head's contribution to the next layer's representation
of all the tokens. And so you're taking that and you're taking it from the you know what that contribution was in the source?
Yeah.
And then you're patching that contribution into the
base. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I get that.
Not the patcher in the prompt. Yeah.
It's okay.
So I mean, there is no magic, right, about the patching. Like, it actually doesn't matter how we patch because this is not the new part of the method.
It's not new part of the method.
What I want to get at is, like, how do you use, like, these multi-token rewards, you know, to decide whether the patching actually did something. So right. Normally we would just look at the probabilities of the...
And that's all you're looking at too, right? You're just
I'm looking at the probabilities in conjunction with the reference model, but I did run an experiment with just the probabilities and it also worked.
So of course, it also works.
Yes.
Right. So subtracting the reference model is not...
The thing is that I haven't tested pure DPO models. So the model that I worked with was Quen. And okay. Quen they said they use a mixture of PPO and DPO. Like they're not really like open about exactly what the optimization method is.
I see.
But like there is a leaderboard on Hugging Face called Reward Bench. And Reward Bench has a bunch of like pure DPO models.
But now the funny thing is that the base model...
Yeah.
You're not patching the base model or anything, right? So it's just fixed. So is it almost tautological that like you subtract this constant out and it doesn't make a difference?
Yeah, that was another thing we were wondering about whether, you know, because this is a difference of differences, if it's just getting canceled out, right? Like in our quantity, so.
If I patch something from source, would I like now the probability of the source response to be higher? Right. I have a target query, right? So would I look at the probability of like the source entire response, but with the target query?
Good question. So we don't touch the source responses at all. So if you notice like this equation, like the denominator only has the pre-patched source desired and undesired. So the only post-patched values come from the base responses.
So you want to change the probabilities of the base responses?
Yeah. So you want to change. So initially, like before any patching, this quantity is negative because you have undesired minus desired.
Mm-hmm.
And after patching, you want this quantity to be positive, undesired minus desired.
I got it. So they differ in whether this is a refusal or not.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like initially, it's not. So assume that this is how to make a cake. Yeah, initially, yeah, like this is going to be negative because undesired is the refusal and answer is the, because this is cake, right? So answer is the desired. But after patching, you're changing the sign. So you're saying that now I want you to upweight refusal and downweight the answer. And what the denominator is doing is it's trying to force these difference distributions to be close to the source. So this is where the connection to the source distribution is. Yeah. Do you think this can be changed or improved? Like, do you have any suggestions?
Not like right now.
Please let me know if you do. Yeah.
So when you say the denominator is supposed to represent similarity with no patching setting, that's what you're saying? What
so,
does yeah?
No, so what you're trying to say here is you want the pre-patched values to be close to the source distributions. Like you, so this quantity is going to be high if the numerator is high and the denominator is low, right? Mm-hmm. So in the denominator, we are enforcing this constraint that the distributions of the source and the base reward differences are close to each other. So the closer they are to each other, the smaller this quantity is and the larger this overall thing is.
Oh, okay.
This is the constraint for you? Yeah, it's just a constraint. We kind of use the IOI equation, so that's where it came from. Yeah.
So the denominator is kind of like a normalizing factor.
Yes,
that is kind
exactly.
of like ensuring
yes.
that the source and the yes. base is doing different things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not on patching, but instead of taking a model from reward bench, have you thought about training your own?
I was just avoiding trying to train like DPO models from like the fine-tuned model. I was just because I was initially just like prototyping, and I think now that I have a prototype pipeline, I think maybe like training our own, like also comparing this with fine-tuning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you fine-tune the model to have these reward preferences versus you just edit like an SFT model before the policy optimization, then you can also compare like how model editing compares to like actual policy optimization. So that's another thing that we want to look at.
Yeah, that's cool. Pause the recording here, but thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Yeah, I'm glad I could actually present and get feedback from you all because you always have good feedback. So please let me know if there's anything else that you think sounded off or just that something that I might have missed, so I can look at it more carefully.
Thanks, Irina.
Yeah.
Yeah.